is Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
Welcome, everybody. It is Bob, Dave, and Moore right here on 710 ESPN Seattle. The opening drive is brought to you by Cherish. We got a big show for you today. Good stuff. We'll be talking some baseball. Ryan Roland Smith will be with us at the bottom of the hour at 3:30. At 3:45, the King, Felix Hernandez, will join us on the program. So go tell your friends. Tell everybody. The King will be here at 3:45. We'll talk to the professor, John Clayton, at 4. And it is Tuesday, which means 5 o'clock. Michael Bradley, El Hombre, will join us as he does every week. So looking forward to a big show coming up. You don't want to miss any of this. And guys, we'll get into the baseball conversation and all of that good stuff in a moment. But Bruce Irvin was in a little Zoom media session today and had a few things to say. We can get into some of that for those out there that didn't hear what he had to say. Cut number one, Bruce Irvin, just on how it feels to be back.
In one word, I would say refreshing. Very refreshing. Knowing that I'm going to a situation that I know that they run it very professional. They take care of their players. You're going to always work. You're always going to compete. And you're always going to be competitive in every game you step in. So, you know, for me at this stage of my career is, going to the best situation. And I felt like going back home, or Seattle, I consider it home, my football home at least. That was the best thing that could happen to me, especially in year 9. I couldn't ask for a better situation.
9 years. He's heading into his 9th year, Dave. That's weird. It feels like it was just a couple of years ago that we heard his name at the draft, and we were kind of had the same reaction we've had with a lot of their draft picks in the first round. Who? Wait, Bruce Irvin, where did he play? There wasn't a ton of familiarity, but entering his 9th year and feels refreshing to be in a comfortable spot for him.
Yeah, well, I can imagine that because, he's going into the what would have been in my last year in the league. And I remember going to Denver thinking, oh, man, this is going to be a great opportunity because, I had John Elway there and, we had a chance to win and we did go to the playoffs that first year that I was there. But, yeah, he knows that this is even a higher hit rate here. I mean, 8 of the last 10 years making the playoffs. And so it's interesting, though. I was just looking at his career in stats and, the two pick sixes that he had here. But also, remember, he had a chance to come here in 18, and a lot of people thought that he would choose here. He ended up going to Atlanta. And there was some, chance that he was going to sign back here, but I'm not sure how strong that one was. But just happy that that he got back here. And, I know you've talked about this a lot, Bob. His high career sack number is 8.5, and that was last year. So hopefully he'll be able to get some production coming in here. And plus, he's just a great guy. I mean, he started off, it was a little rough. He had a little bit of a rough background, but he is he's been nothing but just a joy to be around. And I know that Danny has a special connection with him, buying him the MacDonald, as he likes to say.
So hasn't he changed his diet? Isn't that what we heard?
Oh, I'm not sure about that, but it's pretty cool to have him back here in Seattle.
Well, yeah, the part of it, Dave, is you alluded to it, talking about the personality there in that locker room. Having Bruce Irvin back, just a fun-loving guy, having some swagger. I think it's that's going to be part of it, and then you like the tangible part of it too, because Irvin's had nothing less than 5.5 sacks every year since 2015, which was his last year here. 52 sacks in 8 years, and I was just okay. So Bruce, you're older than you used to be, and that's okay because I was looking at it. He'll turn 33 November 1st, and just some comparable guys: Michael Bennett, Chris Clemens. When they were 33, Michael Bennett for Philadelphia had 9 sacks that year, and Chris Clemens had 8 in Jacksonville. So I don't think 33 is too old to make a difference as a pass rusher, and I think Bruce Irvin's going to make a difference in that, in the sacks for the Seahawks this year.
Yeah, I would certainly hope so. They brought him in with the idea that he's going to fill a gap that was vacated by Clowney, that was vacated by Quentin Jefferson. They need some help. even when those guys last year, they needed help. So he, along with Benson Mayoa, are a massive part of them addressing the issues. And we can debate whether we feel like they've completed that mission or not. We'll talk more about that. But cut number two, Irvin, with a question from his old buddy Danny, talking about heading into year number nine. He feels old.
When you think about it being year nine, how does that make you feel?
Old as hell. This is a blessing, man. You know, a lot of people can't say they've made it 9 years in the league. So it's a blessing.
Did you feel old as hell and going into your ninth year, Dave?
Yes, I did. And I've told this story before. When I came in the league and saw Keith Butler with his two metal front teeth and his wrist that he couldn't bend backwards and this big beard and gray and everything, I was one time at sitting at lunch in Denver, and a bunch of guys, somebody was telling a story about back when I was in high school and how I won a race or something like that. And they were all like, who the hell did that? You know, who was this guy? And they were like, he's right over there, one of my friends. And they look at me. I'm sitting there with like an ice pack on my shoulder, an ice pack on my knees. I couldn't run. I was like a one down linebacker. Two down linebacker, maybe. And yeah, you get into that. But these guys are taking better care of themselves. And did you say he changed his diet, Bob?
I don't think he. I thought I had heard that he doesn't eat McDonald's anymore. I could be wrong about that, but somebody can text in and correct me. I'm pretty sure I heard him say he doesn't do that anymore.
Okay.
Though.
Well, I know when he signed his contract in Oakland, I was working with John Howie back then, and he ordered some ridiculous steak that was like, I don't know how many ounces. And I remember Howie asking the waiter, you know, what did you charge him for it? And it was like $800 or something like that.
For one steak?
So I don't know if he... Yes. I mean, it was an insane amount of meat that he ate. And that guy's always just, he's one of those guys that can, remember Julian Peterson, he would eat McDonald's and everything, and that guy didn't have an ounce of fat on him, so. But yeah, it sounds like he's taking a little bit better care of himself now, and I'm not sure how many days it took him to pass that steak, but it's probably out of his system by now, but yeah, I mean, he's
money well spent.
He's always been a guy that looked, looked pretty lean. And yeah, again, like you said, Bob, just the fact that he was able to have that production, you know, it's kind of funny. We'll go through a couple of D tackles that we're going to look at that are, on the Seahawks roster that are free agent rookie guys. But, you know, it just caused me to start looking around at pass rushers and, you know, different guys. And remember Bruce Smith, and Bruce Smith is the king. With 200 sacks, and I'm not sure if anybody's ever going to get to that. That guy had 10 and a half sacks a year for 19 years. So, I mean, the guy is just was just amazing. But, you know, I was looking at when he was 37, 38, 39, and 40. This is Bruce Smith, played for the Bills, and then this was in Washington, where I think he was more of a defensive end, outside rusher than he was a defensive end, because it's hard to get sacks from defensive end in a 3-4. And he got a lot of sacks in Buffalo, but at age 37, 38, 39, 40, he got 29 sacks. So he was getting 7-plus sacks a year in his late 30s and 40 years old. So hopefully Bruce can be that guy, and he's not even close to being, 40 yet, but still getting on a little bit in age. And, if he takes care of himself at age 32, he's going to be 33. Yeah, he can. He's one of those guys I think that you can still get a lot of production out of.
Yeah, I think so too, Dave. I'm just looking at his stats, and he's only missed 8 games in his career. So last year he missed 3 there at Carolina, but still to get 8.5 sacks in 13 games, you like seeing those numbers. The one number that I just wondered about a little bit, and we didn't get the details on Bruce Irvin's contract for a couple of weeks. I'm not sure exactly what the holdup was on that. But even John Clayton was thinking it was going to be in the $3 to $4 million neighborhood. But when it came in at $5.5 million with a $2 million signing bonus, that was kind of an indication. Dave, I think you also mentioned this too, that they were done shopping for pass rushers. As much as we like to think that they are still in on Clowney, or they maybe would bring in a guy like Everson Griffin, I think Irvin's contract, the size of it anyway, indicated that they might be good to go as is.
Yeah, I hope that's not the case. That's my hope.
But Bob, don't you think that is the case?
I don't know. I'm hoping it's not. I hope they're still, putting some money tucked away over here, some over here, just in case something happens with Clowney, just in case they can, pull off a trade with Ngakoue. We haven't mentioned his name in a while. Maybe it is Griffin. Maybe it's, these guys are still hanging out there in uncertain situations. So my hope is that they still have targets, because I don't believe you have that double team guy on this roster. I don't believe you have, as Dave calls him, the extra meeting guy. Doesn't mean they're not good, and I still think the numbers will be better than they were last year, but I just don't know that you truly addressed your problem from last year in the way that you need to. That's just my opinion on what they have currently.
Well, yeah, if it is, I'm kind of in between a little bit, Bob, but I think if it is, that means that they're counting on a lot from some guys that didn't get production last year. And Rasheem Green did, but I think they're expecting more from him. I think they're expecting more from LJ Collier. They're going to expect more from Jaron Reed. So, and I feel like even if without – okay, so let's say, Bob, they don't sign any other pass rushers. I think you still
yes.
think, and I do too – that they're going to get more than 28, right?
Yeah, I think they do that with last year's crew. I think last year was just a freak situation. I don't know. I don't know. It probably doesn't make sense to say, yeah, you bring back every one of those players, they're going to be better. I don't know that they'd be a better defense. I just think that particular category, that number, would be higher than it was.
Yeah.
So, but moving on with Irvin here.
Go ahead,
Jim.
Bob. No, I just statistically, I think no, and I just think, and if Dunbar's able to play, we think that's going to be an upgrade at right cornerback, and we know that you're going to get Quandre Diggs for 16 games instead of 5. You got him for only 5 games last year, and there was an upgrade with him once he took over for Tedrick Thompson. I think it just stands to reason better coverage is going to give guys more time to get to the quarterback, and even if Mayoa isn't all that great, he's not anywhere near being Jadeveon Clowney, and even if Bruce Irvin's going to be 33 years old in November, I still think it's going to help that pass rush, and you're right. I think they're going to be in the neighborhood of 35, maybe even 39. Dave always talks about 39 being a good season for a pass rush. I think the Seahawks are going to get back in that neighborhood, whether they make another move or not. Thing is, if they do make a move, even Everson Griffin might cost you K.J. Wright, Bradley McDougal, David Moore, Jacob Hollister. One of these guys is going to be a cap casualty. I don't know how you feel about those players, but that's something to take into consideration too.
Well, and I want to get to these cuts from Bruce Irvin, but quickly, Dave, let me just ask you, is there, as we sit right now, we don't know what LJ Collier could have a bust out year and be just night and day from what he was last year. I acknowledge there absolutely is that possibility. Rasheem Green could be a stud, but just based on who they were last year, we don't know what's going to happen this season. Is there an extra meeting guy, as you like to call him, on this roster right now, on that defense?
As far as on the defensive line, I mean, look, Bobby Wagner is still, and a lot of people, I just watched a pick that he had against Carolina that was, I don't think there's many linebackers in the league that make that interception. He almost caught the back half of the ball and took it away from the receiver. I mean, I still think he's a problem. He's a guy that you have to watch out for.
But as far as a pass rusher, I guess.
Yeah, as far as a pass rusher goes, I think Bruce Irvin's probably the closest thing to that. He really is, unless, Jaron Reed can have that kind of, effect on the inside so that they have to double-team him. So, Bruce Irvin, as far as a quick twitch guy off the edge, is probably it. But, again, we don't know what LJ Collier is going to be. Again, the injury thing with him, maybe these two young guys, there's lots of guys like that. So I feel like they have a lot of guys, not many guys though, with a huge resume that would be like, cause if you brought Clowney in, you go, well, there he is. That's the guy. But, like Jim said, I think it's going to be at the expense. I don't care what overthecap.com says. It's going to be at the expense of cutting a couple of really good players.
All right, cut number four. Let's move on to that one. Irvin talking about the pass rush, saying they're young, they're talented, and they're going to be very welcoming of anybody that they bring in.
With this group, it's a young group. You know, Vincent's, he produced last year, but I don't think Vincent has ever been in a major role, like a major starting role as a premier rusher. But I have the complete 100% faith that he can do that. But, you know, I just think we got a young group and we got to work. You know, I couldn't predict how many sacks we're going to get right now, but I think we got a young, talented group, and I'm going to work my ass to lead these boys. And, you know, whoever comes in is you know, just welcome with open arms. And I just hope they be ready to work. But I think we got a talented group, man. I think we're going to be better than a lot of people think we are.
So he said whoever comes in, he welcomes them with open arms. So do we believe that somebody else is still yet to come into the situation?
Well, I mean, I think he's just saying that as, you know, preparing in case they do sign somebody. I'm not sure he knows anything. Who was the guy? He was talking about somebody. Was he referencing a player?
Benson Mayoa.
That part. Oh, Benson. Okay, yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I think that's just one of those things that you say. I don't think he knows anything. But, you know, maybe he gets an idea of – here's the thing, you know, with Bruce Irvin, and you guys have heard me say this so many times, that, you know, the 2-14 season, I thought we were going to be so damn good. No matter what you go into camp with, that's you're thinking, hey, man, we're pretty good. You look around here, we got some talent. We got some potential. We got some good young guys, and that's the only way to be. So I don't – you know, I don't think that he thinks – necessarily that they need anyone else, and I don't think he's, you know, going to give us any kind of clue there, but I feel like every player feels like you're never going to, you know, if somebody asks you, hey, are you guys going to be a pretty good team, or do you think you never respond like, you know, we're like a piece or two away, maybe if we can get a couple of guys in here, maybe we'll get, you know, no, I don't think any player ever says that, you know, maybe some of the older guys, and he is in his ninth year. So that might be something that he maybe is thinking, but for the most part, I think you're pretty optimistic about the guys that you have. And that's just really the only way to be.
Yeah. Well, Russell Wilson did say he would like some more superstars, so we do have that. But, no, I think Irvin maybe was just referring to the guys that are coming in that he's not familiar with yet. L.J. Collier, you talked about there, and hopefully he's going to have some sort of a bounce-back season or something justifying a first-round choice of him. And then the two guys they got this year, Darrell Taylor and Alton Robinson, I like the idea of Bruce Irvin not only coming in and giving you what he can give personally to the pass rush, but what he can do to help the younger guys too.
Hey, before we get to the last cut of Bruce Irvin, I just want to play one of my all-time favorite Steve Rabel clips that is tied into Bruce Irvin.
Bruce, no!
That was the Philip Rivers hit in San Diego.
Bruce, no!
Rabel, that's so good. I'll tell you what, man. I think the only thing that's like close to that, and nobody I don't think saw it or heard it, but I can't remember. I think it was C.J. Procise. Was he the one that fumbled in Cleveland?
Yeah, and he got mad, right?
Yeah.
Rabel?
Oh, man, he slammed the table so hard. I thought the broadcast, everything was going to fall apart. He was so into the thing. You know, and that's the thing. That's what you get from Rabel. You get that passion. So.
It's the best.
I wonder
it's
if him and
best.
Bruce have talked about that.
That's so good. I love that cut. Hey, one more before we get to take two here, and I think Jim will like this cut. Cut number five, Irvin giving credit for more nickel than base in Carolina for his sack numbers last year.
I think they used me a little more at end. We was in nickel a little more. You know, a lot of times we was already down 21-0 in the first quarter. So we kind of got out of the base stuff. But I just think I just had a lot more opportunities. We was in nickel a lot more, so that gave me opportunities to rush the passer more. You know, I thought I was really productive, being that I missed the first three games and still came back and put up solid numbers. So, you know, it was just me getting more opportunities because we was in nickel more than base.
Jim, the floor is yours.
You know, hold on. Well, I want to respond that I want to respond in Rabel-like fashion. Bruce, why? Why did you get more opportunities to rush the passer? It doesn't matter who's behind you. Maybe he knows or has an answer to that question, which I'm very interested to hear.
Yeah, well, I saw your email today, Dave, and I was going to give the floor to you because I didn't, honestly, as much as I don't want to see the base defense as much as they played it last year, and I'd like to see more nickel in 2020, regardless of what Bruce Irvin thinks, I was curious for your thoughts on this because I didn't quite get the correlation that Bruce was making.
Yeah, we'll have to ask him. There's still two outside contained pass rushers. There's still guys rushing in gaps. There's, you know, a different personnel group behind you. But maybe there's something there. And I know we're going to have Mark Schlereth on tomorrow. And he also felt that way. And I guess I need to have that explained to me. But, you know, I'm not sure exactly what Bruce meant. But, you know.
Maybe he just feels like the coverage is better in that situation and gives him more time to get to the quarterback.
Yeah.
There you go.
Good as any answer at this point.
Wasn't better last year with nickel. The coverage was not better with nickel last year.
That's a very, very fair point. All right, let's take two.
It's time to take two. Brought to you by Infinity of Tacoma at Fife.
Take two.
NFL Media's Jim Trotter reports NFL owners have tabled the resolution to incentivize the hiring of minority coaches and general managers, but they approved the resolution that would prevent teams blocking assistant coaches from interviewing for coordinator positions.
All right. Well, I guess that resolution or that idea, the incentive of the draft pick, you move up a certain amount of spots in the third round if you hire a head coach, and a GM is a different, you know, move up. It was interesting on the surface, but I think there are a lot of people that spoke out against it. They know best. They know how it's going to be perceived. I understand, you know, Tony Dungy and others saying the unintended consequence of that are guys getting hired and then having that tag on them that, oh, you were hired as incentive. They wanted to move up in the draft. That's why you got the draft. You know, so I understand that angle on it completely.
Well, and the thing is, you know, we talked about this with some of the texters. I mean, I think because everybody – And I'm not sure what the coaching pool looks like, but that's really the way that you need to look at it. I can guarantee you, though, there's more than 12.5% of black coaches or minority coaches out there that are wanting a head coaching job, because that's the percentage that is head coaches right now. So, just the way that you do it and the way that it's done. But, you know, I think on one side, yeah, that's the case. And then on other, really the only way to look at it is, what does the coaching pool look like? What's the makeup of it? Is it, you know, is it 50-50? Is it more like the NFL where it's 70% black, 30%, you know, or I should say minority, 30% white? I mean, that's really what you have to look at. But I think the NFL's trying to do it. They tried something there. It didn't work out. Everybody, you know, pretty much panned it, including the minority coaches. So it sounds like they're going to continue to work, you know, work forward to try to resolve this problem.
I thought John made a good point on his show today, this morning anyway, that talking about hiring more coordinators as minorities, and because you typically, we always see the coordinators, the offensive coordinator, the defensive coordinator, the next step getting the head coaching job. So all this focus on head coaching for minorities, I think you'll help solve that problem once you get more coordinators. I like what John had to say about that.
Quentin Dunbar and DeAndre Baker have both officially pleaded not guilty to armed robbery charges. The state's attorney's office will decide whether to go forward to trial in each NFL player's case in the coming weeks.
Boy, it sounds like from hearing from legal experts that have weighed in on this, that this may not go anywhere based on the flip-flop of the witnesses and the, you know, the complete 180. Yes, they did it. It was him and it was him. And nope, it wasn't those guys. I think these guys, the witnesses are less than credible at this point. I'm not sure what they have to move forward.
Yeah, it's interesting. I was looking at the article, you know, with Grieco, and he said there's also no video of the incident. He said he visited the home in recent days, and none has been found. So, wow, he went to the home to see if there was any video. No weapons have been found also, nor any audio. So, you know, just, again, we're hoping for the best on this. Just a case of mistaken identity, I guess, or something, hopefully.
Yeah, or something. But it just may not go any further. All right, coming up, Ryan Roland-Smith's been catching up with names like Justin Dunn and James Paxton on his The Top Step podcast, and he's got some insight into Scott Services' coaching style as well. He's going to join us next, give us insight into all of that with Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
No!
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and Moore.
Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
Coming up in less than 15 minutes, the King, Felix Hernandez, will join us here with Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle. Packed show for you. We'll talk to Ryan Roland-Smith here in a few moments. The Professor will join us at 4 o'clock, and then El Hombre, Michael Bradley, at 5 o'clock. A reminder, you can listen to our show via the 710 Sports app. It's powered by Dubin Law Group. You can download the app for free. You've got access to everything. But meanwhile, we've got him sitting on the hotline, so let's talk to him. Our buddy, our favorite Bogan, the one and only Ryan Roland-Smith is with us. How are you, man?
I'm doing good. How you guys doing?
We're doing great. It feels like we'll talk to you about some of the things you've had on your podcast, but do you get the sense, just reading what's going on, hearing people talk, that there's some momentum behind the baseball season starting?
Yeah, there is. I mean, I feel like every time, you know, there's some positive news, there's some negative news as well. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like there's always going to be a situation where it's 50-50 where, you know, something come out, here's the plan, and then someone will want to shoot it down in a sense to say, we can't do this because of this or, you know, anything else. And again, this is something that no one, you know, has ever had to plan for. I just hope that, you know, on the player side, the ownership side, that they can figure this out and understand that everyone's going to have to be flexible all the way through until, you know, if they do start the season all the way through until the playoffs end, there's going to have to be some serious flexibility and, you know, making changes and making adjustments on the fly. Otherwise, it's just not going to happen.
Hey, I know, Ryan, we got cut number 6 here, and James Paxton talking about Scott Service, and I was going to ask you if you ever experienced anything like this. Let's hear the sound first, though.
It was interesting. I got shelled that first start back, and I'm in the outfield the next day. Shagging VP, and Service walks around. He comes up to me in the outfield. He's like, "Pax, we're going to give you one more shot." And he's like,
"Really?
Yeah." He says, "You have one more chance." And he says, "You're either going to go out there and do really well, and or do better, and you're going to stick around, or you're going to go out there and struggle again, and you're going to go down to AAA and stay there for a while." He's like, "You're at a crossroads in your career right
now.
You're either going to go out there and do okay, stay, do bad, go down to AAA, stay there." So pressure's on. You know, I go home and we're playing against Texas the next game.
In Texas or
in Seattle.
Gotcha.
And I ended up pitching pretty well, you know, so I got to stick around. And like you said, my career just kind of took off from there.
Yeah, go ahead, Ryan.
Yeah, well, first of all, I appreciate you guys playing that sound. That was such a great chat with the Big Maple, and just, you know, brought back some really good memories. It was fun having him on, and we're texting after that. He said, because I said to him, I said, "Hey, if there's anything you say on this that you want me to edit or cut out or anything like that," and he said, "No." I said, "I'm pretty comfortable about the Scott Service conversation too, because that was a big part for him that he kind of wanted to get off his chest." Because obviously his left Seattle is in New York, but you know, you asked me if I've ever experienced that. Well, I had. There's been times where I've had coaches. Mel Stottlemyre Sr. was extremely honest with me a couple times and said, "Look, you have to start, you know, doing this or that, or we're just going to send you down." But I was in a different situation than Vic Pax. He was a guy who was a big prospect. He was a big priority guy. Came up, he made a huge adjustment. But I had no idea that was a conversation that went on between him and Scott Service the day after he came back with that new arm slot. And, you know, the way we know him now, I had no idea that there was that kind of pressure put on him. And obviously he responded so well. But, you know, I got to give it to Scott Service too, to know his players and to communicate that way. You know, there's a lot of times where, you know, especially if you're James Paxton and everyone, you know, kisses your butt because you're a big deal, that people just want to sugarcoat things. But there was no sugarcoating right there. He basically said, "Look, get it done or you're going to be in AAA pretty much the rest of the year." And, you know, obviously as the conversation went on, there was a few other things that, that, you know, Paxton, you know, told me about his relationship with Scott Service. And I'm learning things, you know, from Justin Dunn and from James Paxton about Scott Service, the way he communicates with his players. I love it because it's rare these days. You know, everyone wants to shoot into that thing. So I love that. I got no problem with that whatsoever.
Hey, Ryan, we're going to be talking to Felix Hernandez at 3:45 once we're done talking to you. I'm just curious, if you were to have Felix Hernandez on the Top Step podcast, what's a question that you'd like to ask him and that I can steal and ask him at 3:45?
That's a good question. I have been working on it. I'm trying to actually get him on. So I don't want to, he said he will. It's just a matter of getting the time to do it. So I don't want to give you any of my ammunition. No, I'm joking. No, I think the biggest thing with Felix, and the one thing I really want to ask him, and you can take this and run with it if you want, was when and if there was ever that point to make that adjustment, go into an off season like your peers have done, like Justin Verlander did, or some of these other guys who resurrected their career, you know, 30 plus years old. When, or you know, if it happened this off season, to make that adjustment, to sacrifice the time and say, look, this is not working out physically, this is not working for me, I have to make a huge adjustment and change things up. So I think for me, that's the one thing that I'd love to ask Felix this off season, because for me, when you're watching him those last couple of years in Seattle, they weren't pretty, they weren't fun. Obviously, there's a few highlights, his last game, you know, in Seattle, obviously, and yeah, a couple other highlights, but besides that, we all know that it wasn't the Felix that I played with. And I kept saying to myself every offseason, man, like if I was your dad or your friend, it's like, go into this offseason, sacrifice 3 to 4 months. Don't go on those trips to Europe or, you know, go do your thing for 2 months. Lock it in and go get around your peers and text, you know, give Justin Verlander a text message or give someone who has done it and say, what have you done, man? What have you changed? And, you know, can I steal some of your ideas here? Because I need to figure this out because there's way more left in the tank. I think I would steer down that way and see if that was this offseason, because he was in the first time ever in his career in a situation where he had to prove that physically he was up for the challenge. And that's something I want to talk to him about. Hopefully I get a chance to talk to him about that if he comes on the show.
Ryan, it's always good to talk to you, man. Make sure you check out Ryan's podcast, the Top Step Podcast, and great stuff there every single week. Ryan, we'll talk again soon, man. Thanks.
Appreciate that. Thanks.
There you go. By the way, we've got another edition of Mariners Classic tonight at 7 p.m. It's Felix Hernandez's shutout versus the Yankees in 2012. It's brought to you by Roofers and Waterproofers, Local 54. The king himself, Felix Hernandez, will join us next with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
Hernandez looks in, the windup, and the 2-2 pitch. Strike three called. Felix Hernandez pumps his arms in the air. Felix has just thrown the first perfect game in Seattle Mariners history.
Oh, what a moment. What a moment. Felix Hernandez, the king, will be joining us here in a moment, hopefully soon here. We're expecting to speak with Felix Hernandez as we've basically been playing his greatest hits all week, all the Mariners classics that have been played all week, and people enjoying that. A lot of people text in about it, so a chance to speak with him. And I was just looking at his numbers, guys, during the break there. We were just talking... There was actual spring training going on. It feels like it never even happened. But he had 4 starts with the Braves. It didn't feel like spring training was but a week old, maybe. But, yeah, he had 4 starts with the Braves. He pitched 13 and two-thirds innings and had an ERA of 1.98. I understand you're pitching against guys that will be in, you know, low A, double A, so, you know, guys that aren't going to be at the major league level and everybody's working on something. But good to see him have some level of success just in his first appearance in a different uniform. It'd be weird to see him out there in a Braves uniform.
Yeah, it's so weird to pull up a Pro Baseball Reference and see Felix Hernandez, Atlanta Braves. Yeah, just very bizarre. But, you know, I was going to say one of my favorite moments was out at Edgar's. Jim, you remember this. I remember after we interviewed him, you went over and took a baseball and you were asking him how he threw his changeup, the circle changeup, and all that stuff. And I remember, Jim, he sat there and probably spent like 10 minutes just sitting there talking to us and showing us, you know, how to throw pitches and stuff
well,
like
well,
that.
Well, let's talk to him about it. Let's talk to him right now. He's with us now on the hotline. The king, one of the greatest to ever wear a Mariners uniform, Felix Hernandez, is here. Felix, how are you, man?
Thank you, guys. I'm good, man. How are you?
We're great. We've been playing your greatest hits all week, all these Mariner Classic games going on. It's Felix Hernandez week. The city of Seattle misses you. And we were just talking before you got on the line of, you know, it feels like spring training never happened, but I'm looking at the numbers. You had four starts with the Braves in spring training. How weird was it for you to step out? I know it wasn't, you know, games that counted, but how odd was it for you to step on the mound wearing a uniform that was not covered in Seattle colors with the name Seattle or Mariners on it?
You know what? I'm just gonna be honest with you, man. All the stuff that I do in Seattle. I mean, I'm never gonna forget. I got all my moments in Seattle, but you know, going to spring training with the team that was they're gonna make the playoffs, probably win a World Series, and actually fighting for one spot as in the starting rotation was a little different. It was a little different, but it was a challenge that I took. And I really like it.
Well, Felix, we miss you, man. And tell us what you've been doing. Where are you right now, and what are you doing to stay in shape?
I'm at home. I'm in Miami. So I'm at home. I'm, you know, doing little stuff. We can do anything because the gym's not open yet, so not doing a lot of stuff.
Hey, Felix, that last start in September against the A's, when you had the King's Court in full force, what was that like when you look back on it?
Oh, man, that start? I think I will never forget that start. That was one of those moments that I really loved, the city of Seattle, because the fan base, I mean, all the support they gave it to me, it was amazing, man. You see, anybody don't cry in that start, they don't have, I mean, they don't have a heart.
Hey, Felix, as I said, we've been playing your greatest hits all week, and people have been reliving all these great moments where you were on the hill. What's is there a one single moment that you would point to if somebody, you know, had never seen you pitch and they said, what game should I watch from your history? Which one should I watch? Which game would you point them to?
Let me ask you this. Which one you like better? It's Felix Week. That's what I hear. But which one you like better?
The perfect game.
The perfect game. I was there. I was at the game. I talked to you after the game, and it was unbelievable. That's number one for me.
Let's take the perfect game out of that. Just give me another game that you like better. Take the perfect game.
No perfect game. Oh, that's the best one. The last game, the emotion that was there, watching you step up onto the fence there, and you're taking pictures with the fans, and it was emotional, and it was a culmination of your whole career. That I know it's not the prime of your career, and it wasn't a playoff or anything, but just seeing the outpouring of love from the fans and everything, that to me was magic.
Man, that was amazing. That was amazing. That's what I call Seattle home, man. That was amazing. All the love, the support that the fans give it to me, it was amazing. But I'm going to give you my best. I'm going to give you my best.
Okay.
I got a few, so I'm going to give you my best. 2007.
I'll tell you.
Opening day. 2007, opening day in Seattle. That's one of them. That was my first opening day as a starter. That was the first one. My mom was in the stand watching me playing professional for the first time in my career. And that was when I threw 8 innings, strike out 12, I think. And we won that game for nothing days. That's one of them. That's one of them. I take the against Toronto when I wasn't coming out from the mound that I said, this is my house. That's another one because you know the fans of the Blue Jays. I mean, the whole stadium of Seattle was blue when the Blue Jays come to Seattle.
That was so much fun. I can still picture you coming off the mound shouting at all those Blue Jay fans. That was fantastic.
Oh, yeah, man. It's my house. You're not coming to my house like that. No. My house.
I can't believe I'm looking at the picture of you right now, and you broke into the big leagues August 4th, 2005 with the Mariners at the age of 19. And Felix, you're sitting there, so you're 34 now. And I was really encouraged when I saw your numbers down there in spring training with the Braves. You had an under 2 ERA, and it's in spring training. What kind of adjustments are you trying to make with your new team?
I mean, I've still got it. Sorry, guys. I mean, I'm not really, really confident. No, it's just, I mean, I just try to, you know, do little things. But I was in really good shape going through spring training. And I was healthy. I'm healthy. But the last 2 years, I wasn't healthy at all. And I was healthy, and I was competing for a job. So I went there with different, you know, different mentality. And, you know, if you look at my spring training number, I think the only one that is stand out is 2005 and this one in 2020. Because other than that, I know how to spot the rotation, but I don't care about things. I'm just trying to get ready. But on this one, I just fight it for a spot. So I just went there to just do my thing.
The great Felix Hernandez is our guest here for a few more moments with Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle. Felix, have you put an end date on your career? Do you feel like, man, I could pitch till I'm 38, 40, or do you want to just go 1 year at a time? How do you view the end of the career?
No, actually, I'm not thinking about that yet because I think that I still got more to do in the game of baseball, and I know I can pitch. I got a lot of weapons to go out there and get people out. But actually, I don't know. I'm going to go year by year because my goal is to get to 200 wins and to get to 3,000 strikeouts. So if I get to that goal, I can hang my spikes. I'm done.
Hey, Felix, one of the things that always stood out about you to me was how you really shined in some big moments. It seemed like whenever you went to New York and faced the Yankees, that you had a big game in you that night. Was that something that you really thrived on?
Actually, it was New York and Boston. I love it. I remember the old Yankee Stadium was the best, man. It was the best. I mean, just trying to go out there, you know. I mean, you know, you're in the East Coast, you're facing, you know, a team with a lot of history. And actually, I just trying to go out there and shy and just be Felix. Be King Felix.
Felix, as far, and I know, again, it was just a couple of games in spring training, so you didn't really get a chance to face the National League, but we see hitters who struggle when they go from one league to the other. How tough of an adjustment do you think it'll be going from the American League to the National League?
No, I don't think I'm going to make an adjustment. I mean, you're facing eight hitters. I mean, you're facing the pitcher. But American League 1 through 9, you just all those guys can hit. But in the National League, it's different. You get 1 through 8, and then you're facing the pitcher. So I don't have to make any adjustment. I just got to, you know, like I said, I just got to make my pitches. And if I make my pitches, if I locate my fastball, I think I can survive.
All right, Felix, I want to end it with this. How much are you going to miss Shannon Dreher when you're in Atlanta?
Oh, my goodness. Don't worry. We're going to get back to Seattle. Don't worry. I'm going to – hey, by the way, say hi to Shannon. I'm missing. I miss her a lot. Excuse me. I'm just kidding. Don't listen to that.
No, come on, Felix. We all love Shannon.
No, we all love you. Yeah, I love Shannon, too. She's amazing. She always supports my career, so I love him.
Hey, Felix, last one before we let you go. Do you have any doubt that you'll be playing baseball this year, or do you feel like it's still questionable?
Man, I'll tell you something, man. At this time, I don't know. We don't know nothing yet. Hopefully we can play. But I'm not gonna risk my life. I'm not gonna risk my family, so I don't know.
Well, we'll all wait and see. We hope we get a chance to see you out there. Felix, Seattle misses you. We love you. You're one of the greatest to ever put on a Mariners uniform. We appreciate you taking some time with us, and we wish you nothing but the best. Stay healthy and stay safe out there.
You guys, too. Just stay safe, stay healthy. I mean, thank you for the invite. It was a pleasure to talk to you guys.
There you go. Thanks, the King, Felix Hernandez, spending a few minutes with us here. Great to catch up with him, and He was off to a great start in spring training. Four games under his belt in spring training with an ERA just a shade under two. So interesting to see what he will be able to do if the baseball season gets going, and hopefully it will. We're going to come back. We'll talk some football with the professor, John Clayton. He joins us next with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.